Yes, may I begin? Okay, so good morning, everybody. It's such a pleasure that I'm going to present a brief review on the progress in the Master of Spatial Seismology today. My name is Ehsan Marawedji. I'm a Marie Curie Fellow currently working in Keurleuven in Belgium, and soon I will be moving to Amsterdam to join the BIN COSMOS team led by Selma. As explained, unfortunately, given my Iranian nationality, I'm not given still a visa to enter United States and physically be present among you guys, which I really love to do. However, a big thanks goes to the to the conference organizers, specifically Stefan, and also the KITP support team, which really made it easy for me to give my presentation remotely. So let me just begin. But what I would be addressing today, I'm going to talk what astroseismology can teach us about the internal structure and evolution of intermediate and massive stars. But we all know that all these stars have the simple structure with the convective core and radiative envelope. So if I say today massive star or intermediate massive star, because of this homology similarity between this range of stars earlier than F-type, I will be taking all more or less the same. So we know that P-mode and G-mode and also internal gravity waves can propagate inside the radiative envelope of massive stars, and they bounce back between the outer surface and also between the inner boundary of the convective core and radiative envelope. So they can give us a direct access to the physics of the deep stellar interior, which almost no other method can really go. And with that, we can hopefully also address quite a number of long-standing and important problems and issues relevant to stellar astrophysics. So what specifically I will be talking about today will be the interaction between pulsations and rotation. And then I will be diving a little bit deeper, very near the core. We can hopefully also put quite tight constraints on the overshooting and extra mixing in the radiative envelope of stars. And then finally, I will conclude by addressing the recent progress on stellar opacities. So let me first begin by explaining the simple role of pulsations and rotation in early type stars. So what you see here in this diagram is very simple. On the x-axis is the mode periods, and on the y-axis is the pulsation mode amplitudes from observations. So you see that going from left to the right, from the short period range to the long period modes, the difference and the spacing between these peaks gets smaller and smaller, and the modes in the right hand side get quite packed compared to the ones in the left hand side. That's basically the period difference, which is shrinking, and that's what I would like to introduce as period spacing, as one of the very informative quantities that we can directly measure from observations. So in the bottom panel of this figure, you see just the period difference between consecutive peaks in this figure, and it obviously shows a seemingly linear trend with a negative slope as you go from left to the right, as you go from short period mode to the long period mode. So this specific trend is attributed to what we call the prograde modes, which are the modes which travel at the surface of the star with the same direction as the star rotates. But if you're lucky, which for some specific cases we definitely are, fortunately, with the Kepler data, there are sometimes a secondary series observed in massive stars, as you see in the bottom panel. So this is a secondary series, what we call the retrograde series. And as you see from short period to the long period range, the spacing between the frequency, the period, I'm sorry, increases progressively. As you see, there is a linear trend in the period spacing as going from the left-hand side to the right-hand side of the diagram. And this corresponds to retrograde modes, which travel in the opposite direction of the rotation. So as a first rough approximation, you can just fit a straight line to each of these series and constrain the slope. Of course, for prograde mode, the slope will be negative. For retrograde mode, the slope will be positive. But what does that mean? If we assume that the stars are as a rough approximation, are rotating uniformly, then it's possible to measure the rotation frequency from the slope of the period spacings. So what you see in this figure is the rotation frequency of stellar models on the x-axis, and on the y-axis is the slope of the period spacing. So of course, as you saw in the previous figure, the slope for retrograde mode is positive, and the slope for prograde mode is negative, and it's also so for the zonal m equals zero mode. So what you basically do is, from observation, for instance, you find your period spacing, you measure the slope, you project it on the y-axis, and then try to read out the corresponding rotation frequency from x-axis. And also the uncertainty margin around each of these trends that you see is also pretty small, and is very weakly dependent on uncertainties in our model, like from lack of knowledge on metallicity, if you don't know the opacities very well, also from different treatment of rotation. All of them quite contribute a little to the uncertainty on measuring the rotation frequency from slope of period spacing. So this really provides a robust way to measure the rotation frequency of a star with great precision, something that, well, we can also do that with spectroscopy, but with larger errors. But rotation and pulsation also do more in a star. In fact, it seems like the waves, the P modes, G mode, the classical heat-driven waves, and also the internal gravity waves, they can interact with each other, with the background structure, and exchange angular momentum locally with the background star where they are propagating inside. So the prograde modes, in fact, they extract angular momentum locally whenever they are excited. So this means that at any layer in a star where a prograde mode is excited, that region will spin down because angular momentum is extracted. For retrograde mode, the behavior is exactly the opposite. Wherever a retrograde mode is excited, then angular momentum is deposited, meaning that that region will spin up. So to have a great sense of that, in the right-hand side, you see a figure. On the x-axis is like the two outer 20% of a massive star model. I think this is a six solar mass star model. On the y-axis is a quantity which is proportional to the acceleration. So whenever the sign of the quantity of the curves is positive, it means that that region is spun up by a wave. So if you look at the black curve, which is the spin up induced by a retrograde mode, you see that in some layers, this mode is trying to spin down that part of the star. And in outer part of the star, up to the surface, it is capable to spin up that region. And the prograde mode is also doing the opposite. So retrograde mode, the collective effect of retrograde mode and prograde mode in rotating massive stars is capable of inducing mean flows right below the surface of these stars. So this indeed can have also other interesting consequences. So in a secondary study by Lee Niner and Mattis in 2016, they showed so what you see here is a 2D view of a distribution of the angular momentum excess in their model. And the region in red is where the angular momentum is deposited right below the surface of the star, and also narrowly around the equator. So when you spin up these stars, which are rotating and pulsating, the angular momentum excess deposited by retrograde modes, for instance, right below the surface, is capable of even ejecting the outer layers of the star, stripping off the outer layer, and even form the decretion disk that's co-rotates with the outer radius of the star, and form the B bracket E phenomena. So one of the possible and plausible channels to form B bracket E stars is perhaps the angular momentum transport by waves. So far we have learned that waves can do a lot inside the stars, and they can locally spin up or spin down some parts of the star. So it's quite reasonable to imagine that differential rotation also can be established and also modified by the propagation of waves. So what I'm showing you here in the right-hand panel is a frequency splitting of a P mode. So it's an L equal one mode, but because of the act of rotation, the mode degeneracy is broken, and now you see a triplet. And the frequency separation between the central peak and the neighboring peaks is proportional to the rotation frequency. Because P mode predominantly propagate in the outer envelope, they provide us information and some quantitative measure of the rotation of the outer envelope. On the right-hand side, you see the contrary. You see the G mode frequency splitting, but we know that also G mode propagate more closer to the core. So the frequency splitting of G mode provides information about the rotation of the deep layer, inner layers of the star. So by studying those stars which exhibit P mode and G mode at the same time, and having a look to see the frequency splittings, we can measure the core to surface rotation frequency in stars, which is nowadays possible thanks to the immense precision of the Kepler database. So here I'm going to show you two examples of two F-type stars, which are quite a slow rotators and very close to the terminal age main sequence. On the left-hand side, you see as the red curve, the rotation profile from the core up to the surface in the first star, this first F-type star from Kepler. And you see that the star is almost rigidly rotating with the core slightly rotating faster than the envelope. In the second example is actually the contrary. You see that the core is rotating slower than the outer envelope. However, if you contrast this and compare this to the predictions of the standard 1D evolutionary model, including the effect of rotation and angular momentum transport, near the terminal age main sequence, what we expect is a rotation contrast between the core and envelope between a factor 2 to 5, which is quite different from what we observe here. So this means that strong angular momentum transport inside the stars is effective and active, which we are not still properly and decently taking care of. As a third and last example here, I would like you to show you even more exciting results for another Kepler B star. This star is around 3.2 solar masses roughly, and the star exhibits 19 G modes. All of them are triplets. However, the triplets were not symmetric. So Triana and collaborators, they tried to do the modeling of through the inversion technique of all the 19 triplets, the frequency splittings, with three different independent approaches. And the result that they find all the time consistently is like the following. So what you see in this figure on the x-axis is the radius, and the y-axis is the rotation frequency of the star. And you see that somewhere in the middle of the envelope, there is a change of sign in the rotation frequency of the star. So just to help you imagine a little bit better what's going on in this crazy star, it's really like the outer part of the star rotates counterwise compared to the inner part. And I know that Tommy yesterday has talked about all her predictions regarding the angular momentum distribution in the star through the act of internal gravity waves. So I would like now to move to my second part, where I would be addressing how seismology can help constrain the overshooting and extra mixing in the deep layers of the stars. Here you see a very simple plot with the mass on the x-axis going from core up to the surface, and also on the y-axis the mixing coefficient in log scale. For early type of stars, we know that there is a fully developed convective core on top of which we can put an ad hoc overshooting layer. So here I'm putting an exponentially decaying overshooting layer with adjustable widths. And even beyond the overshooting layer, what I show in with green, you can put extra diffusive mixing with a flat profile, very simple, only to measure the order of magnitude of each of these mixings, but also it's possible to increase or reduce the intensity of mixing in the outer envelope. So based on this very simple, so this is the least model-dependent approach, say, to estimate the mixing in the stars. So based on this simple model, we can compute evolutionary models and compute their pulsation frequencies and compare that with observations and try to minimize this parameter space and quantify how much overshooting and extra mixing to require in the envelope of massive stars. But the great key is provided by the propagation of G modes. As you see on the top figure, you see a G mode which is propagating from the surface down to the boundary of the convective core with a great amplitude where the overshooting layer is. So that's how we are indirectly seeing the mixing on top of the core and in the deep interiors of the stars. So as a first example, I would like to show the case of the Kepler B star. That's the same star with counter rotation, but this time we try to do the modeling of the observed period spacing with MESA models. And what we found that it's possible to put quite a tight constraint on the overshoot free parameter. And also on top of that, we seem like to require a small amount of extra diffusive mixing in the outer envelope. So for the second example, here is another Kepler B star. This time, your experts in understanding period spacing, you see the negative slope of the pattern. And of course, this immediately means that the star is a fast, moderate rotator. Here, this is a 20% rotation rate with respect to the Roche breakup. We tried also to model the observed period spacing of the same star again. And using that, we could succeed to put also additional constraints on the core overshooting in this star, which is significantly greater than the previous example. And it's also compatible with the predictions of the basic theory of rotating the stars, where we know that the act of rotation allows the cores of the stars to grow. Also, the amount of mixing we require in the outer envelope is also small. 3 minutes, sure. So I just quickly move to my last example here. Here's an example of 8 Kepler stars between 1.1 solar masses and 1.5 solar masses done by de Hervels et al. And they tried to constrain the relative mass of the convective core, fully mixed core, in all these stars. And using that, they also tried to calibrate the overshoot parameter in these stars. So if you take a look at the gray point, which is of course a model-dependent approach in order to calibrate the overshooting mixing on top of this core, they also include the atomic diffusion there. There seems to be a linear trend perhaps in the overshooting as a function of initial mass in these stars. So my whole conclusion here is that astroseismology can help us address extra mixing and core overshooting in massive stars. I know that I'm almost running out of time, but I will be pretty fine with 2 more minutes or 3 more minutes. As a last part, I would just like to address that in the envelope of massive stars, there are multiple evidences that we are underestimating the amount of iron and nickel opacity, specifically around the iron opacity bump. So recently, Jim Bailey and collaborators, they directly measured the wavelength-dependent iron opacity in the laboratory. And what you see here is their data as black curves compared to the green curve, which comes from the OP monochromatic opacity. And the difference between the two is quite significant, meaning that the iron opacity, based on this measurement, seems to be by 75%, it needs to be increased from our OP models. Numerical also calculations recently done by other teams like Mondet and Torchies also show that the iron opacity requires 50% up to 100% increase. And even for nickel, a factor of 5 to 6 times increase in nickel opacity is needed. So it seems like we are underestimating the iron opacity here. So let me just quickly move to my last slide here where I would like to conclude. I just quickly tried to encourage you to pick up on astroseismology. It is a very precise and robust technique and allows us direct access to the deep workings of massive stars and hopefully addressing the puzzles and physics of deep stellar interiors. Today, I showed that there is a possible strong interaction between pulsations and rotation, and it's possible to redistribute angular momentum inside the stars and develop mean flows by the act of internal gravity waves and the classical PNG vote. And even we may be able to explain the B bracket E phenomena and formation of disk around massive rotating stars. I also try to show preliminary results of few example cases where astroseismology can provide very tight constraints on overshooting and extra diffusive mixing in the radiative envelope of massive stars. And the last but not least, seems like we have to re-estimate and reassess the opacities that we put in our stellar models, specifically around the iron bump and from iron and nickel, and recompute perhaps our, or I would say, for the next generation of stellar models, we have to reconsider our input physics being the stellar opacities. So thank you very much. And if you would like to engage into further discussions, I have also put my email address and a Skype ID there. And now I can take your questions.
Thank you, Ezan, for a very nice talk. We will take the questions. I will ask you to speak only in that mic and to speak very loudly and slowly so that Ezan can hear you.
Hi. So is there degeneracy between the extra mixing that you have to put in the envelope and the overshooting? And what is the extra, the physical meaning of that extra mixing in the envelope?
Okay, so two questions you asked. First, there is a slight correlation between the overshoots and extra mixing. And in fact, it's possible to put quite tight constraints on both of these. I've demonstrated that in my 2015 paper. Unfortunately, I don't have slides here to show that, but I've mapped the correlation diagram between all the parameters, and there is a very weak correlation actually between the extra mixing and overshooting as we do it with our seismic modeling. The second question, what's the meaning of the extra mixing in the envelope? Did I get it right, I think? Do you ask what is the meaning of extra diffusive mixing?
No, he asked what kind of mixing you have in mind. What could provide this mixing? I think that was a question, right?
Oh, okay, so well, we know from basic theory of rotating the stars that a collection of hydrodynamical instabilities can induce chemical mixing inside the star. This is perfectly worked out in the literature, in the book, for instance, by André Meder, or by the paper by Alexander Heger, 2005. So a collection of instabilities can mix the composition on top of the receding core in the stars. And well, the question is, by which intensity is this mixing going on? How to quantify that? So it seems like astroseismology can provide an indirect, also model-dependent way to put some order of magnitude constraints on the mixing in the envelope.
I'm not sure if this is something you had to skip, but is there any evidence from pulsations that are unstable by the Kappa mechanism that we need additional opacities to explain the seismology?
I didn't get the question, honestly. Would you please rephrase?
So
is there extra evidence?
You mentioned stellar opacities, but you didn't directly connect it to pulsations. Uh-huh. So do you need changes in opacity to explain any of the pulsators, unstable pulsators?
Yes, okay. So let me get back to one of my last slides here. So here I actually took the results from Bailey et al. 2015. I recomputed Roseland mean opacities by increasing the iron and nickel opacity by 75%. And I calculated the theoretical and predictions of the mode instabilities for hybrid pulsators, meaning that on the diagram that you see here, with T effective on the x-axis and log G on the y-axis, you only put a point where a model is predicted to show G mode, excited G mode, and P mode. So here, that's what we call the instability strip, basically, of hybrid pulsators. So what you see here in the light gray is the predictions of the instability strip if you use the OP default opacity tables. But if you increase the iron opacity, as suggested by Bailey, by 75%, then you see that the extent of the instability strip quite gets broader. And then the position of the confirmed hybrid pulsators on the same instability diagram has a seemingly much better agreement with the revised instability strips. So this is another evidence, perhaps, that additional opacity of the iron group element is needed in our models. Am I answering your question or not?
Yes.
You are.
Thank you.
There is another question by Matteo.
Hi, Zen. Thanks for a nice talk. So you show us some evidence for differential rotation in some main sequence stars.
It's unclear to me. I cannot hear you clearly, Matteo.
Sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Please speak slowly.
I will.
The words merge into each other when I hear them.
I'll do my best. You show evidence for differential rotation in some main sequence stars. However, these were, I would say, anomalously slow rotators, periods of hundreds of days, 200 days. Then you show us another star, which was more common in terms of its rotational properties at the surface, period of rotation of 2.2 days. And my question is there any hope to measure the degree of differential rotation in that object or similar objects which are rotating more typically?
So the question is if there are more typical stars that we know where we would be able to measure the differential rotation, but not these very slow rotator ones.
Correct. Right? My worry is that the very slow rotators are special, and we're not going to learn something about the typical main sequence B star.
Yes. So, well, very relevant question. In fact, so with the slow rotators, we have the lock to see the frequency splittings. So we see the prograde and retrograde and zonal mode at the same time. When you increase the rotation frequency, let me find an example here. For instance, this star, this is another Kepler star. The rotation period is around 2.2 days. However, we only observe the prograde mode. We don't see the retrograde mode to be able to constrain the rotation frequency here. There are a sample of Gamma Doradus stars. They are moderate to fast rotators, and they are studied by Timothy van Reef. So this is an example of that case. So this is a star where we observe the prograde and retrograde mode at the same time. However, still, I know that Timothy is still working on his sample. He still hasn't updated us with a possible differential rotation based on these moderate rotators. So I agree with your criticism, but the work is in progress. We have the data, huh? We have the data, and interesting people are working on it.
We have 1 minute for another question.
I will show a diagram on Friday with the status.
That's good.
Anyone else?
Everything is there.
Okay, thank you very much, Ezan.
Thank you. And please.